You know, when you sit down at a piano and you hit a key, you expect a very specific mechanical chain reaction.
Right, like you press the wooden key and that motion engages a lever.
Exactly. A felt-covered hammer strikes a metal string. The string vibrates at a specific frequency, and well, you hear a note. The entire process is completely transparent.
Yeah, if you want to understand how a piano works, you just open the lid, press a key, and watch the physics happen in real time.
Cause and effect right there in front of you. But then you open up a modern artificial intelligence interface. You sit down at your keyboard, you type in a prompt, you hit enter, and suddenly you are not looking at hammers and strings.
No, you are staring at a blinking cursor. And within seconds, paragraphs of perfectly coherent text just start pouring out.
Right. It generates code that actually compiles. It provides a differential medical diagnosis that actually makes sense. And the lid on that particular piano feels, I mean, it feels completely nailed shut.
It really feels fundamentally unknowable to anyone who doesn't, spend their life writing code in a research lab. We see the raw data going in, and we see the highly articulate agent acting on the other side, but the middle is just a blur.
It's a black box. Which brings us to the source material we are tearing into today for you, our listeners. We're doing a deep dive into Dr. Neil Agrawal's phenomenal breakdown titled Inside the Transformer.
And he essentially hands us a crowbar to pry the lid off that box.
He really does. At the bottom of the AI stack, we generally know what raw artificial neurons do. We understand the basic concept of feeding data into a network. And at the top of the stack, we know how AI agents act.
Right, they have chat interfaces, they browse the web, they talk to us in conversational tones.
But today, we are bridging that massive conceptual gap in the middle. We are going inside the transformer architecture, which is the structural blueprint that has driven essentially every frontier language model since it was introduced back in 2017.
And we are approaching this masterclass deep dive with a very specific, intensive focus. We're not just going to map out the anatomy of this architecture. We are going to interrogate how it actually learns.
Yes. Uncovering the training mechanics embedded deep within the structural design, because the way this machine is built is intrinsically, like unavoidably linked to how it is trained at an industrial scale on thousands of graphics processing units.
Absolutely. But before we get into the heavy training math, there is a premise in Dr. Agarwal's text that completely upended my understanding of what is happening when I interact with an AI.
Oh, the single skill thing.
Yeah. It is the idea that despite everything a language model can do, despite the poetry, the complex programming, the logical reasoning, it actually only possesses one single skill.
And even stranger, it has absolutely zero ability to plan ahead.
It projects the ultimate illusion of foresight, right? But when you strip away the polished chat interface and look at the raw mechanics, the entire system is just doing one incredibly narrow job millions of times in a row.
Okay, let's unpack this. If it isn't planning an essay, and it isn't reasoning out a problem step by step in some hidden drafting space, what is the single job it is actually performing?
It is predicting the next token. That is the autoregressive reality of a large language model.
Just the next token.
Just the next one. Given a sequence of text, the model's only function, its entire universe of capability, is to output a mathematical probability for every single possible word in its vocabulary being the next one in the sequence. That is it.
Let me make sure I am visualizing this correctly. If I ask it to write a mystery story with a twist ending, it isn't outlining the story.
Not at all.
It doesn't know who the killer is in paragraph one or how the twist will be revealed in paragraph five.
It doesn't even know what the next word is going to be until the math calculates it. Dr. Agarwal gives a wonderfully clear example of this immediate localized prediction.
Walk us through it.
Imagine the sequence generated so far is simply the patient was given. The model takes that exact sequence, runs it through the transformer architecture in one single forward pass, and spits out a probability distribution.
Like a list of odds.
Exactly. It might calculate that there is a 38% chance the next word should be aspirin, a 21% chance it is A, a 14% chance it is 2, and maybe a 9% chance it is EV.
It just produces a giant spreadsheet of bets covering every word it knows.
Yeah. And to actually generate the text you see on your screen, the system just rolls a weighted die based on those probabilities. It samples one token from that list.
So let's say the random number generator lands on the highest probability and draws aspirin.
Right. It then appends aspirin to the end of your original sequence.
So the sequence is now the patient was given aspirin.
And then the process starts completely over. It takes that newly updated sequence, feeds the whole thing back into the top of the machine, and asks for the probabilities of the word that comes after aspirin.
Generating a 1,000-word essay means spinning this exact isolated wheel 1,000 separate times.
That loop, the autoregressive generation loop, is the entirety of what we call generating text.
I am struggling to accept this because, I mean, it feels philosophically wrong when you look at the quality of the output.
Oh, I know. It's counterintuitive.
When I ask an AI to write a complex Python script, it opens brackets on line 2 that it perfectly closes on line 40.
Yeah.
If I am driving a car, I only make a left turn because I know my destination is to the left.
Right.
What you are describing sounds like driving a car on a pitch black, winding mountain road at 80 miles an hour with headlights that only illuminate 3 feet ahead of the bumper. If the machine cannot see the destination, how does it ever manage to write code that perfectly compiles?
Well, the tension you're feeling is the exact reason this architecture is so revolutionary.
Ah.
The model truly has no look-ahead buffer.
Yeah.
Any closing bracket in a line of code, any concluding sentence of a thesis, must be computed completely fresh at that specific step.
Based solely on what it's already written.
Yes. Based solely on the transcript generated up to that moment.
Mm.
It survives that pitch black mountain road because it has a photographic, mathematically perfect understanding of the road it has already driven over.
Wow.
It looks at the sequence of words leading up to the current moment, and it extracts so much dense relational meaning from that history that the only mathematically logical next step just so happens to align with what we perceive as a long-term plan.
So it is predicting the most logical next paving stone over and over until suddenly a perfectly engineered bridge appears behind it.
Exactly.
But to build that bridge without falling off the cliff, it has to deeply understand the stones it just laid down. Mm. It has to be able to read the context of its own output.
Which brings us to a massive mechanical hurdle.
Yeah.
Neural networks do not understand human language. They cannot read letters.
Right. They just do math.
Right. They only process vectors, which are lists of numbers. So before the machine can derive any context, it has to translate English into mathematics. This happens through two distinct conversions at the front door of the model tokenization and embedding.
I want to break these down thoroughly because I think a lot of the weird quirks we see in AI behavior stem from this very first step. If I type "the patient was given" into a prompt, what is physically happening to those characters?
The raw string of characters is not fed into the neural network. Instead, a separate, simpler algorithm chops your text into chunks called tokens.
Okay.
The model has a fixed vocabulary of these chunks, usually between 50,000 and 200,000 entries that it established before it even began training. Common words like bee or patient might get their own single dedicated token.
But what about rarer words?
Rarer, more complex words are assembled from smaller subword pieces. The text gives a medical example of this subword chopping. The word hyponatremia, which means low blood sodium.
To a human doctor, that is one single concept, one single word.
But to the AI's tokenizer, it might get chopped into four separate chunks. Hypo, nat, raw, imia. And each of those chunks is assigned a unique integer ID from the model's vocabulary list.
Ah, and this mechanical reality explains a mystery that frustrates countless people. It explains why these massively intelligent language models are notoriously terrible at counting letters or, you know, playing games like Wordle.
Yes. If you ask a language model how many times the letter R appears in the word strawberry, it often gives you the wrong answer.
Because it literally cannot see the letters.
It never sees letters. It only receives the integer IDs representing the chunks. Asking an AI to count the letters in a word is like handing a human a sealed shipping container, telling them it is container number 452, and asking them how many individual atoms are inside.
They have no physical way of knowing because their perception stops at the outer shell of the container.
Exactly.
If tokens are the containers, I like to think of them as Lego blocks. But instead of being uniform, single stud blocks like individual letters, they are Lego blocks of varying sizes and shapes.
That's a great way to picture it.
Some are large blocks representing whole words. Some are tiny single character blocks. And the model can only build its understanding based on the blocks it has in its bin. It doesn't know the chemical makeup of the plastic. It just knows the shape of the block.
So we have our text chopped into a sequence of Lego blocks, each represented by a number. The next step is embedding. This is where we start assigning actual meaning to those blocks.
How does that work?
The integer ID of a token acts as an index. It points to a specific row in a massive lookup table. When the model looks up an ID, it retrieves a learned vector, which is a list of several thousand numbers.
A list of thousands of numbers representing a single word fragment. So we're moving from language into high-dimensional geometry.
We are, and it is profound how this works. These embeddings are not random numbers assigned by human engineers. Over the course of the model's training, the mathematical values inside these vectors are constantly adjusted.
Adjusted how?
Well, tokens that are used in similar contexts in the training data slowly drift toward each other in this massive multidimensional space. The mathematical coordinate for dog ends up located very close to the coordinate for puppy and extremely far away from the coordinate for carburetor.
The geometry itself encodes the semantic meaning of the language.
Yes.
You mentioned these vectors are adjusted during training. Let's dig into the how of that, because this is our masterclass focus. How does a computer know to move the point for dog closer to puppy? It doesn't have a dictionary.
This is where we need to understand a concept called gradient descent, which relies on calculus. Imagine the model's goal is to predict a missing word in a sentence. It makes a guess based on the current mathematical locations of its word vectors.
Okay.
If it guesses wrong, a function calculates the exact mathematical difference between its wrong guess and the correct answer. This is called the loss.
So the loss is just a measurement of how badly it failed on that specific prediction.
Yes. And using calculus, specifically a process called backpropagation, the system traces that failure backward through the network to see which numbers caused the bad guess.
Tracing the error backwards.
Right. It calculates a gradient, which tells it the exact direction and amount to nudge the numbers in the embedding vectors to make the predictions slightly less wrong next time. If you do this billions of times across millions of books, the vectors naturally organize themselves into a map of human meaning.
Words that appear in similar linguistic environments are forced into the same mathematical neighborhood to minimize the prediction error.
Exactly.
So the machine maps out our language blindly simply by trying to lower its error rate. But I see a glaring structural problem here.
What's that?
If meaning is purely based on the geometric location of these token vectors, how does the machine handle identical words in different orders? Because the sentence dog bites man and the sentence man bites dog use the exact same tokens. If I look up those words in the embedding table, I am retrieving the exact same vectors. They would occupy the exact same space in the model's mind, but the meaning of those two sentences is entirely opposite.
You have identified a fatal flaw with raw embeddings. Because neural networks process these vectors simultaneously in massive batches, they have no inherent concept of sequence or time. A pile of words is just a pile of words.
So how is that fixed?
To solve this, before the tokens move any deeper into the transformer architecture, a second lookup table is used to retrieve a position signal, which is then mathematically added into each token's embedding vector.
So it takes the meaning vector for dog and adds a secondary vector that represents position zero.
It stamps it with its location. It alters the fundamental geometry of the token. The vector for dog at the start of a sentence is now mathematically distinct from the vector for dog at the end of a sentence.
That makes sense.
And crucially, just like the word embeddings, these position vectors are also differentiable. They are learned during that same gradient descent process. The model learns how the concept of first word relates to the concept of second word, simply by minimizing its prediction errors over time.
Okay, so we have taken human text, chopped it into token IDs, swapped those IDs for dense geometric vectors, and mathematically stamped them with their location in the sentence. They are fully prepped and ready to enter the core of the blue box.
Yes, they are ready.
But I am still pushing back on how a model derives deep context. Even with position stamps, a sentence is not just a list of sequential definitions. A sentence is a web of references. If meaning is just geometry, just points floating in space, how does the machine know which points are interacting with each other in a complex sentence?
That structural challenge perfectly tees up the defining breakthrough of the 2017 transformer architecture. The core problem of natural language processing is that meaning is entirely relational.
Relational, okay.
A word's true significance depends heavily on other words in the sentence, and sometimes those other words are separated by hundreds of intervening tokens.
Dr. Agrawal provides a sentence to illustrate this ambiguity. Let me read it. The drug lowered blood pressure because the model's job is to predict what comes after the word it.
Right.
But to make an accurate prediction, the model first has to deduce what it refers to. Does it refer to the blood pressure or does it refer to the drug? As human readers, we use our world knowledge to know it is the drug. But to the machine, drug is four tokens in the past.
And historically, older AI architectures from before 2017 handled this relational distance very poorly. Before the transformer, the state-of-the-art systems were called recurrent neural networks, or RNNs.
How did they work?
These networks process text sequentially, exactly how humans read left to right, one word at a time. As they read, they try to maintain a running summary of everything they had seen so far, compressing that history into a single fixed-size mathematical vector.
So an RNN reads word one, puts it in bucket, reads word two, mixes it into the same bucket. It is trying to hold the entire context of a document in one limited mathematical space.
And as you can imagine, the bucket overflows. By the time a recurrent network has read 500 tokens into a document, the subtle nuances of token number 12 have been squeezed into absolute mush.
It just loses the details.
Right, the network suffers from structural amnesia. It physically cannot retain sharp details over long distances because every new word overwrites a piece of the past. The AI field realized they desperately needed a mechanism where any token could directly consult any earlier token with perfect clarity without relying on a compressed running summary.
Which brings us to the most famous mechanism in modern AI, attention.
Attention. It's the absolute core engine of the transformer. The cleanest way to visualize the attention mechanism is to think of it as a dynamic, soft database lookup that every single token in a sequence performs simultaneously.
I want to spend a lot of time here to ensure we understand the exact mechanics. How does a single word perform a database lookup?
When a token enters the attention layer, its embedding vector undergoes three separate matrix multiplications. You can think of this as the token projecting three distinct avatars of itself into the network.
And what are these avatars called?
These three projections are called the query, the key, and the value.
The Q, the K, and the V.
Exactly. The query is the token broadcasting. Here is the specific information I am looking for to understand my own context. The key is the token broadcasting. Here is the specific information I contain, acting as an advertisement.
And the value.
The value is the actual underlying semantic content that the token will hand over if another token decides it needs it.
Let's apply this to the drug-lowered blood pressure because the example, the token it, is sitting at the end of the sentence. It is empty, ambiguous, and trying to figure out what it represents. So it projects a query.
Yes. The token it emits a mathematical query vector. If we translated the geometry of that vector into English, it might look something like, I am a pronoun looking for a recent singular noun that possesses the agency to cause an effect.
While it is broadcasting that specific query, what are all the preceding words in the sentence doing?
They are simultaneously holding up their keys. The token for drug holds up a key vector that essentially advertises, I am a singular noun representing a chemical object.
Okay, I see.
The token for lowered holds up a key that advertises, I am a past tense action verb. The token for pressure holds up a key that says, I am a biological metric.
So how does the network physically match the query of it to the keys of the past tokens? You mentioned the dot product earlier.
Yes, the dot product is the mathematical operation at the heart of this matching process. It takes the query vector of one token and multiplies it against the key vector of another token. In high-dimensional geometry, a dot product measures alignment.
Meaning if they point in the same direction?
Exactly. If two vectors point in exactly the same direction, the resulting number is very large. If they point in completely opposite or orthogonal directions, the number is small or zero. So the mechanism computes the dot product between the query of it and the key of drug, the key of lowered, and so on.
Yeah. And because the query of it is looking for a noun that causes an effect, and the key of drug advertises exactly that, their vectors align beautifully in that mathematical space.
Their alignment produces a very high raw score. In Dr. Agarwal's detailed example, the dot product between it and drug might result in a high number, while the match between it and lowered results in a much lower number.
But raw scores are hard for neural networks to process stably, right?
Very hard. So the mechanism passes all these scores through an activation function called a softmax.
What does the softmax function actually do to those numbers?
It normalizes them. It takes any list of raw varying numbers and squishes them so that they are all positive and they all add up to exactly 1.0 or 100%.
Oh, I see.
The highest raw scores get the vast majority of the percentage, and the lower scores are pushed closer to zero. So after the softmax, the token it might allocate 71% of its attention to drug, 14% to lowered, and 8% to pressure.
It creates a precise weighted distribution of relevance.
And that leads to the final step of the attention mechanism. The token it receives a weighted average of the values from those earlier tokens, strictly based on those percentages.
So it absorbs 71% of the value vector of drug plus 14% of the value vector of lowered, and so on.
Exactly. These absorbed values are mathematically added into the embedding of it. The ambiguous pronoun literally becomes infused with the chemical concept of the drug.
Here's where it gets really interesting. I am trying to visualize this entire mechanism operating at scale. Dr. Agarwal uses a medical ward round analogy where a doctor asks a question and all the specialists offer answers.
A good analogy.
It works, but given the scale of a language model, I keep picturing a frantic stock exchange pit.
Oh, I like that.
Imagine every token in a 5,000-word document is a trader standing on the floor. At the exact same microsecond, every single trader screams out their buy orders. Those are the queries. At that exact same microsecond, every trader holds up their sell sheets. Those are the keys. And instantly, they all run massive calculations to match their buy orders to everyone else's sell sheets to figure out who has the most relevant stock values to trade them.
The stock exchange analogy is brilliant because it captures the most crucial architectural property of the transformer. It is completely violently parallel.
Everything happening at once.
Yes. Unlike the old recurrent neural networks that patiently read left to right, word by word, the attention mechanism does not wait. Every single token on the trading floor is screaming its query and flashing its key simultaneously across the entire document. Yeah. It is resolved through one massive, instantaneous matrix multiplication.
And abandoning the sequential reading of text in favor of this massive matrix math is what triggered the entire AI explosion, isn't it?
It is the inflection point of the modern era. The hardware industry had spent decades developing graphics processing units, or GPUs, primarily for rendering video games.
Which are good at parallel math.
Exactly. A GPU is terrible at doing one complex task sequentially, but it is a god at doing 10,000 simple math problems at the exact same instant, like calculating the color of every pixel on a screen simultaneously.
Wow.
The transformer architecture perfectly aligned the task of processing human language with the physical architecture of the GPU.
Mm.
It turned language into a parallel math problem, which allowed researchers to train models on orders of magnitude more data, far faster than anyone thought possible.
But wait, as I think about this parallel trading floor, I see a catastrophic problem when it comes to training the model. We established in the very beginning that the autoregressive loop requires the model to predict the next word based only on the past words.
Right.
During inference, when you or I are talking to a model, that happens naturally because the future words haven't been generated yet. But during training, we aren't feeding it one word at a time.
No, we are not.
We are dumping entire books onto the stock exchange floor at once to maximize that GPU efficiency. If all the words are present simultaneously, what stops token number 4 from just looking at token number 5's key to see what the answer is?
You have just diagnosed the fatal flaw of parallel processing in an autoregressive system. If we simply ran raw attention during the training phase, the model would cheat.
It would just look ahead.
Yep. The query of token 4 would heavily align with the key of token 5. It would extract the exact answer, the prediction error would be 0, and the gradient descent process would completely halt. The model would learn absolutely nothing about predicting the future because the future is already available to it.
So how do the engineers force a parallel machine to learn sequentially? How do you prevent it from looking ahead when all the data is sitting right there in the GPU memory?
The solution is a concept called causal masking. And it might be the most elegant, simple mathematical hack in all of computer science.
Okay, I'm ready.
When you look at the actual PyTorch code used to build a transformer, which, shockingly, is only about 60 lines of code for the core architecture, there is one specific function that saves the entire system. It is called masked fill.
How does masked fill actually function on the trading floor?
Let's go back to the dot product step. The network calculates a massive grid, a matrix of raw scores representing how much every token wants to attend to every other token.
Okay, the giant grid of matches.
Right. Before those raw scores are allowed to pass through the softmax function to become percentages, the masked fill function steps in. It draws a diagonal line through that matrix, and it literally blanks out the entire upper triangle of the grid.
What do you mean by blanks out? Does it delete the tokens?
It does not delete the tokens. It overwrites the attention scores. Specifically, it takes every single score where a token is attempting to look at a token that comes after it in the sequence, and it replaces that score with negative infinity.
Wait, negative infinity?
Yes. So token 4 calculates its alignment with token 5, maybe gets a high score, but then masked fill instantly overwrites that score with negative infinity.
and y negative infinity.
Recall what the softmax function does. It turns scores into percentages. When you feed negative infinity into a softmax function, it outputs a hard mathematical 0%.
Oh, wow. So token 4 is permitted to distribute 100% of its attention across tokens 1, 2, 3, and itself. But its connection to tokens 5, 6, and 7 is completely and mathematically severed.
The mask forces the model to be blind to the future, even though the future data is physically sitting in the GPU's memory right next to it.
So during training, the model is basically taking a massive pop quiz on thousands of words all at once, and this mask acts as the teacher's hand covering the right side of the page so it can't peek at the answers.
That is exactly what it's doing. During training, the model is not just practicing on one word at a time. It makes its thousands of blind predictions all at once.
And inevitably, because it is just learning, it gets many of them wrong. So what does this all mean for the learning process? You mentioned cross-entropy loss earlier, but I want to understand the physical mechanism of that learning. How does it fix itself from a wrong guess?
Let's trace it step by step. The model predicts there is a 38% chance the next word is aspirin and a 9% chance it is IV. We look at the actual training text, and the true next word was IV.
So the ideal prediction should have been 100% for IV and 0% for everything else.
Exactly. Cross-entropy loss is the mathematical formula that calculates the distance between the model's sloppy 9% guess and the ideal 100% reality. That gap is the loss value.
And once we have that gap, the loss value, how does the model actually fix itself?
Through the backpropagation we discussed. The calculus chain rule allows the system to take that loss value and run it in reverse through every single equation in the network.
It runs the math backwards.
It asks, how much did this specific parameter in this specific attention head contribute to the error? It calculates the gradient for millions or billions of parameters and nudges all of them slightly. The parameters that were most responsible for the bad guess get shifted the most.
So next time it sees the phrase, the patient was given, the internal math will naturally output a 10% chance for I instead of 9.
Yes, and you do this trillions of times across petabytes of text, and the network slowly sculpts itself into an entity that understands the deep statistical structure of human knowledge.
The scale of that computation is just staggering. The fact that the causal mask allows thousands of those error calculations to happen simultaneously in one forward pass is really the engine of the entire AI boom.
It is the secret sauce of training.
But I want to keep moving up the structural stack. We have translated text into vectors. We have run them through the attention mechanism where they query each other and exchange contextual values, safely masked so they don't cheat. But what do they actually do with that gathered context? Just holding information is not the same as thinking about it.
That's a great point. Attention merely moves the information between the tokens. It routes the data, but it performs very little actual computation on that information.
So where does the computation happen?
To refine the thought process and extract deep insights, a complete transformer block requires three additional components: multiple heads, a per-token multi-layer perceptron, and the residual stream.
Let's take them one by one. Dr. Agarwal points out that the architecture doesn't just rely on one big attention operation per layer, it uses multiple heads.
Yes, rather than forcing one massive query key value operation to figure out every single nuance of a sentence, the architecture splits the token vectors into smaller pieces.
And does what with them?
It runs 8, 16, or sometimes over 100 smaller attention operations in parallel. Each of these independent operations is called an attention head. And the brilliant part of this design is that these heads naturally specialize during the gradient descent training process.
When you say they specialize, you mean they take on different jobs. Did the programmers assign those jobs?
The programmers assign nothing. The network organizes its own cognitive structure purely by attempting to lower its prediction error.
That is incredible.
Researchers perform what is called interpretability research, which is essentially dissecting a trained neural network like a biologist examining cells under a microscope, and they discover these striking specializations.
What kind of specializations do they find?
They will find one specific attention head that only activates when it needs to resolve syntax and grammar. They find another head whose entire existence is dedicated to tracking quoted speech to determine who is talking.
Unbelievable.
In models trained on code, they find heads solely responsible for ensuring that an open parenthesis eventually gets a closing parenthesis.
It is evolving its own internal bureaucracy to handle the complexity of language.
It truly is. But once all these specialized heads have gathered their specific pieces of context from across the sentence, they need to consolidate and process that information. That brings us to the second component, the per-token multi-layer perceptron, or MLP.
Dr. Agarwal describes the rhythm of a transformer block as communicate, then compute.
That rhythm is the heartbeat of the model. Attention is the communication step. The tokens talk to each other across the sequence and gather context. The MLP is the computation step.
And what exactly is the MLP?
The MLP is a standard, dense, feed-forward neural network that is applied to every single token independently. After the token gathers its context from the word round, it retreats to its own room, passes its data through the MLP, and thinks about it without interacting with any other tokens.
I often wonder where the actual facts are stored in a language model. The attention mechanism just routes context around. If I ask a model, what is the capital of France? Where does it physically pull the word Paris from?
The current consensus in AI research is that the vast majority of factual knowledge is stored within the weights of these MLPs. Roughly two-thirds of a model's total parameters, the billions of numbers that dictate its size and capability, live inside the MLPs.
So they act like a hard drive.
They function as a massive learned key-value store of raw facts. The attention heads analyze the sequence to figure out what concept is being requested, and then the MLP is queried to retrieve the factual association stored within its parameters.
So we have the attention heads gathering specialized context, and the MLPs computing the facts. A single token passes through all of this machinery, its vector being heavily modified.
Right.
How does all this distinct work come back together without the new information completely overriding the original meaning of the word?
That is the genius of the third component, the residual stream. In many older deep neural networks, as data passed from one layer to the next, the new output completely replaced the old input.
It overrode it.
Yes. But in a transformer, the output of a module, whether it is an attention head or an MLP, is simply added to the token's original vector. Nothing is ever overridden.
I think of this like a patient's medical chart being passed up the hierarchy in a massive hospital. You start with the baseline chart, which is the original token embedding vector.
I like this analogy.
Then the chart goes to the attention heads, the specialized doctors. The syntax specialist reads the chart, finds some relevant grammatical context, and instead of erasing what was already on the paper, they just write their findings on a sticky note and slap it onto the file.
Yes, the mathematical addition operation functions exactly like a sticky note.
Then the chart goes to the MLP, the senior consultant. The consultant reads the baseline chart, reads the sticky notes left by the specialists, consults their own vast memory of medical facts, writes their own concluding sticky note, and adds it to the pile.
And the chart just keeps moving up through the hospital, getting thicker and richer with annotations.
Right.
And in a large model, you can stack 12, 48, or even 100 of these transformer blocks, each containing attention heads and an MLP on top of each other.
Wow.
The residual stream is the central corridor that flows straight through the center of the entire architecture, from the first layer all the way to the last. Because the modules are only adding to the stream, the mathematical gradients during backpropagation can flow cleanly all the way back down to the early layers without getting distorted.
Dr. Agarwal also mentions a step called layer normalization happening in this sequence. What does that do to the medical chart?
Layer normalization is a crucial bit of structural hygiene. Before a module is allowed to read from the residual stream, the data vector is normalized, meaning its mathematical values are rescaled to maintain a standard statistical spread.
Why is that needed?
If you keep adding sticky notes, eventually the numbers get too large and the network becomes unstable. Normalization is like a nurse standardizing the units of all the lab values on the chart so the doctors don't misinterpret the data. But the core workflow remains. Read the stream, compute new insights, and add the new sticky note back to the stream.
So we have built this incredible parallel self-organizing machine. It gathers context, it computes facts, and it builds up this richly annotated residual stream layer by layer.
Right.
But while the medical chart can only hold so many sticky notes, the hospital eventually runs out of physical filing space, which brings us to the most defining physical limitation of the machine, the context window.
Yes. In our previous discussions regarding AI agents, we talked about how they are forced to summarize or compact their transcripts when conversations go on too long. Now that we understand the math of the transformer, we can finally understand why that summarization is physically mandatory.
The context window dictates the maximum number of tokens the model can process in one single forward pass. It is a hard, absolute limit. Why can't we just make the window infinitely large?
There are two main reasons. The first goes back to the position embeddings we discussed. The model has only been trained to recognize mathematical position stamps up to a certain maximum number.
So it runs out of numbers.
Exactly. If a model was trained on a context window of 8,000 tokens, it has never seen a position 8,001 stamp.
Oh.
If you hand it one, it will not know what to do with the geometry.
And the second reason.
But the second, vastly more critical reason is about hardware limits, memory, and computing power. It is the inescapable math of the attention matrix.
Let's do a deep dive into this specific math, because understanding this explains the entire economic structure of the AI industry. Dr. Agarwal mentions the quadratic cost, the n squared bottleneck.
Let's walk through the scaling. Recall how the attention mechanism works.
Mm.
Every single token must compare its query to the key of every single earlier token in the sequence. If you have a short sentence of 10 tokens, the mechanism must perform roughly 100 mathematical comparisons per attention head.
10 times 10 is 100.
Now, if you double the sequence lengths to 20 tokens, you do not simply double the computational work, you quadruple it. The mechanism must now perform 400 comparisons.
Ah, this is what n squared means. The work scales exponentially with the length of the input.
Exactly. Every time you add a single new token to the context window, it must pair with all the tokens that came before it. If you want a context window of 100,000 tokens, which is roughly the size of a small novel, the attention score matrix in every single head, in every single block of the model, must compute and store billions upon billions of mathematical pairings for a single forward pass.
So when a listener uploads a 50-page PDF to a language model and asks for a summary, and they notice the system takes 10 seconds to respond instead of the usual 1 second, they are physically feeling that n-squared math bottlenecking the server farm.
They're maximizing the quadratic cost.
They are forcing the GPUs to compute an exponentially larger matrix.
That massive computational burden is why context window size is the headline specification for new models. It is why generating long outputs is so expensive for the companies hosting them, and why agent loops are explicitly programmed to summarize older parts of a conversation to keep the raw token count as low as possible. They are aggressively managing that n squared budget.
While this limitation is frustrating from a user perspective, it creates a deeply fascinating cognitive quirk in how the AI experiences information. Dr. Agarwal contrasts the AI's memory with human memory, and the difference is stark.
It highlights the difference between a biological gradient of recall and a mathematical binary of recall.
What do you mean by that?
Human memory decays gradually over time and distance. Remember what I said a few moments ago, perfectly. You have fuzzy, generalized memory of the piano analogy we used at the start of this discussion. And you likely have absolutely zero memory of what you had for breakfast last Tuesday. Human memory degrades on a curve.
Wait, so there is absolutely no human-like memory decay for the AI. It's completely binary. Either it remembers with 100% geometric clarity, or the information effectively ceases to exist in its universe.
The AI has no curve. Within the bounds of its context window, the AI's recall is 100% direct and flawless. Because attention is a content-addressed database lookup, the model can mathematically hop from token 8,000 all the way back to token 12 in one single instantaneous matrix calculation.
That is wild.
There's zero degradation caused by distance. Every single token inside the window is equally and perfectly available to any attention head that decides it needs it.
So the cliff is absolute.
Completely. If a piece of information is located at token 8,000 and the context window is 8,000 tokens long, it is perfectly clear. If that information gets pushed to token 8,001, it falls off the edge of the matrix. It does not exist. It cannot be queried.
Which is why we need agents.
That is the fundamental reason we have to build external memory files, vector databases, and agent architectures around the model to give it long-term persistence. The raw transformer engine itself lives entirely in the eternal, flawless present of its specific context window.
So to give this machine a longer memory, we need those agent loops. But that raises the final, perhaps most important piece of the puzzle. How do we get this raw next word predicting calculator, this autoregressive engine that just spins the probability wheel, to act like a helpful agent in the first place?
It's a great question.
If its only goal is to minimize prediction errors by mimicking internet text, well, the internet is full of garbage. It is full of trolls, half-finished thoughts, and toxic arguments.
That reality is exactly why the journey from predicting internet text to becoming a helpful assistant requires two distinct monumental phases of training, pre-training and post-training.
Let's break those down. Phase one, pre-training. What is the goal here?
Pre-training produces what we call the base model, We take that 60-line structural blueprint, scale it up to contain billions of parameters, and feed it a colossal slice of the internet.
And this is where the masked pop quiz happens.
Exactly. The training process uses the cross-entropy loss and backpropagation we detailed earlier at a massive industrial scale. In this phase, the model is purely 100% focused on next token prediction. It is learning the physics of grammar, the structures of coding languages, and memorizing billions of facts into its MLPs.
And the text points out a hilarious behavioral quirk of a raw base model. If you sit down at a terminal and prompt a base model with a simple question, say, what is the capital of France? It might not answer Paris.
It is highly likely it will not answer the question. It might simply generate 9 more geography questions in a row.
Because it is mimicking the data it saw.
Exactly. On a test prep website, a list of 10 questions in a row is a highly mathematically plausible sequence of text. The model has learned human knowledge, but it has absolutely no concept of helping the user. It is just continuing the statistical pattern of the prompt.
And if you prompt it with a toxic comment,
it will likely generate more toxic comments.
Yeah.
Because that is how internet forums operate.
So pre-training is like locking the AI in a library to learn the fundamental laws of grammar, physics, and facts, while post-training is sending it to finishing school so it actually knows how to have a polite conversation.
That is the perfect analogy. To give the model social skills, we move to phase 2 post-training. This is where we create the assistant.
And this is where my mind was truly blown by Dr. Agrawal's explanation. I assumed the chat interface was a separate piece of software wrapped around the model. But the architecture itself, the transformer blocks, the attention heads, the MLPs, none of it changes between phase 1 and phase 2, does it?
Not a single line of the structural code changes. The model remains an autoregressive next token predictor. Only the mathematical weights, the billions of numbers inside the embeddings and the MLPs, are carefully adjusted.
How do they adjust them to make it helpful?
Post-training usually involves a process called reinforcement learning from human feedback, or RLHF. First, humans write highly curated demonstration conversations, showing the model exactly how a helpful assistant should format its answers. The model is fine-tuned on these examples.
Then
the model is asked to generate multiple different answers to a single prompt. Human raters, or a separate automated reward model, score those answers.
Let me guess. If the user asks for a tutorial on how to pick a lock, and the model provides a step-by-step guide to breaking and entering, the reward model gives it a terrible score.
Right.
If the model politely refuses and says it cannot assist with illegal activities, it gets a high score.
Precisely. And just like the cross-entropy loss during pre-training, that reward score is used to calculate a gradient. Backpropagation pushes those reward signals down through the network, nudging the weights. We train it until the raw statistical impulse to continue the transcript perfectly aligns with the human desire to receive a polite, helpful response.
And what about the chat format itself? The way the interface says user and then assistant before the AI speaks.
Those are just special marker tokens injected into the sequence. They are part of the vocabulary, exactly like the word apple. The model learns the statistical pattern that when it sees the specific token denoting the end of the user's prompt, followed by the specific token denoting the start of the assistant's turn, the most highly probable next tokens should form an accurate, helpful answer.
It is essentially sending the AI to a rigorous finishing school. It learns how to format a polite conversation using the massive vocabulary and factual knowledge it acquired while locked in the library.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, when you step back and view the entire system, it is truly awe-inspiring. Dr. Agrawal describes it as turtles all the way down. But because of this masterclass, every turtle is now a mechanism you understand.
It really is a symphony.
Massive scale calculus trains the geometric embeddings in the MLPs. The causal mask allows for incredibly efficient parallel training on GPU hardware. The attention mechanism dynamically routes relational meaning between words. The residual stream accumulates that meaning safely. And that entire transformer engine sits inside an agent loop that manages the hard limit of the context window. It is a world-changing symphony of mathematics, all built on a tiny 60-line structural blueprint.
What an incredible technical journey we have been on today. We set out to open the blue box, to understand the exact machinery of thought operating between the raw neurons and the chat interface, with a deliberate focus on how it all learns.
We started by demystifying the autoregressive loop, the realization that the model is just guessing the next word over and over with absolutely no master plan. We watched human text get shattered into token IDs and transformed into floating coordinates in a high-dimensional space.
We explored the 2017 breakthrough of Attention, the Frantic Stock Exchange, where tokens project queries to seek context and offer keys to provide it. We saw how Masked Fill covers the future tokens during training so the model doesn't cheat the pop quiz. We climbed the residual stream, watched the specialized heads and the MLPs add their sticky notes of insight, and hit the hard physical ceiling of the N-squared context window.
And finally, we saw how post-training and human feedback shaped that raw statistical power into a helpful conversational assistant.
It fundamentally changes how you look at the blinking cursor on your screen. You aren't just typing to a machine. You are initiating a cascade of billions of geometric calculations. But before we wrap up this intensive deep dive, I know you had a final thought you wanted to leave us with. Something that bridges this artificial architecture back to our own reality.
I do. Throughout this discussion, we have marveled at how an artificial intelligence can produce such profound logic reasoning, complex coding, nuanced arguments, while possessing absolutely no master plan, no internal monologue, and no foresight. It is simply performing a simultaneous mathematical database lookup to guess the very next word based strictly on the context generated so far.
Which feels so alien to how we perceive our own intelligence.
But is it actually alien? Here's the question I want you to mull over today. When you are speaking off the cuff in a heated meeting, or when you are in a flow state, arguing a point passionately without a script or a teleprompter, do you always know exactly how your sentence is going to end when you begin it?
That is a fascinating question.
Or are our human brains doing something remarkably similar beneath the surface? When we speak effortlessly, are we tapping into some magical holistic foresight, or are we just running our own highly evolved biological autoregressive loop, confidently predicting our own thoughts just one token at a time? Let that reshape how you view your own mind today.
What a place to leave it. Thank you for joining us on this Masterclass Deep Dive. Until next time.